Bhagavad Gita is a spoken message of the God Himself, recorded by Vyasadeva. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the transcendental narration of the activities of the same Lord Krishna, which alone can satisfy the hankering desires of the living being for eternal peace and liberation from miseries. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is meant for all the living beings all over the universe for total liberation from all kinds of material bondage. Such transcendental narrations of the pastimes of the Lord can be described only by liberated souls like Vyasadeva and his glorified representatives who are completely immersed in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Only to such devotees with the pastimes of the Lord and their transcendental nature become automatically manifest by dint of devotional service. No one else can even know or describe the acts of the Lord, even if they speculate on the subject for many, many years. The descriptions of the Bhagavatam are so precise and accurate that whatever has been predicted in this great literature about 5,000 years ago is now exactly happening. Therefore, the vision of the author comprehends past, present, and future. Such liberated persons as Vyasadeva are perfect not only by the power of vision and wisdom, but also in oral perception, in thinking, feeling, and all other sense activities. A liberated person possesses perfect senses, and the perfect senses only can one serve the sense proprietor Hrishikesh, Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam, therefore, is the perfect description of the all-perfect personality of Godhead by the all-perfect personality Srila Vyasadeva, the compiler of the Veda. Om Jnana Jnana Dasya Jnana Jnana Shakaya Chakshur Dhamdhanyana Tasmay Shri Guruvya Nama Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Karadara Shri Vasari Purvata Prima Hare Krishna 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 Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Mother, I won't be able to focus. So let's read the translation again. Oh, we ask that your vision is completely perfect. Your good fame is spotless. You are firm in law and situated in faithfulness, and thus you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in France for the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage. So we are in the fifth chapter of the first canto entitled Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the previous chapter we have heard how Srila Vyasadeva, he compiled the Vedic literature. So originally there was the one Veda which was being received in oral form, meaning that people could remember, their memory was very sharp, and when there were the Vedas were spoken to them, they could actually remember everything. So there was no need of writing it down. But Vyasadeva, because of the advantage of his spiritual vision, and Vyasadeva's qualifications are being described in this verse, how his vision is completely perfect. His fame is spotless, he's firm in vow and situated in fruitfulness. So these are some of the qualifications required to think of the pastimes of the Lord. Not, as mentioned in the purport, not anyone can just think of the pastimes of the Lord. We have to be pure and be rendering pure devotional service. So Vyasadeva, because of his spiritual vision, he could see that in the age of Kali, qualities of men and women will deteriorate day by day. So one of them is memory will reduce, and we can also perceive how our memory is actually reducing day by day. We are actually depending upon so many kinds of gadgets to store information. So even if someone tells us their phone number, we'll actually struggle to remember. So not much proof is required. So our memory is actually reducing, and Vyasadeva could foresee that, and therefore he decided to compile the Vedic literature, to put it down into writing. So for the benefit of mankind, he broke the one Veda into four. And he entrusted different Vedas and their branches to his disciples and grand disciples. And in this way, different branches of knowledge came forth. deal with the metaphysical side of things. So they deal with basically extricating the living energy from material nature. They deal with the spiritual subject matter. But of course that's in an indirect way. Though Krishna is also present in the Upanishads and the Vedanta Sutra, but it is more or less in an indirect way. So the qualities of the Lord are more or less described by negation. Like we see in the Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning chapter, this method of neti-neti is being used by Krishna. So the soul is not this, the soul is not that, it's not this, not that. So in the same way, it's described that Krishna does not have a form like this, Krishna does not have a form like that. So, but that does not mean that Krishna does not have a form. So the Upanishad and the Vedanta Sutra describes that how the Lord does not have a material form. But nonetheless, that doesn't mean he doesn't have any form. So we also see in the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads how the Lord is near but far. He's within the heart but he's still as far. He can run but not run. He can walk but cannot walk. So these kind of seemingly contradictions are presented. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't have a form. That doesn't imply. So, but people who are less intelligent and who are speculating, they who do not have a bona fide spiritual master, they actually, when they read such sections of the Vedas, they actually come to the conclusion that Krishna is formless or God is formless. So the ultimate aspect of the absolute truth is to the max, maybe Brahman. There's nothing more than that. So, and then after compiling all the Vedic literatures, Vyasadeva was still experiencing some kind of despondency because he had not sufficiently glorified Krishna. So, and he also, because he introspected, Vyasadeva introspected what was the cause of his lamentation. He actually, because Vyasadeva was perfect, he actually came to the conclusion that because he did not glorify Krishna sufficiently, therefore he is not happy. And this is Srila Vyasadeva, who is known as the personality of Godhead. So Vyasadeva was feeling this kind of emptiness in his heart. So then that is to say for all other living entities also, that if we are not engaged in hearing and chanting the pastimes of the Lord, then we will also experience emptiness. So though Vyasadeva was so qualified and yet compiled the very literatures. So in this verse it's mentioned that, and then Narada Muni came in the scene. So Vyasadeva was actually looking for an answer, and at the same time Krishna sent his bona fide representative, Narada Muni. So Narada Muni came and actually told him that actually that's right, because he hadn't sufficiently glorified Krishna and his devotees, therefore you are feeling unsatisfied. And he actually chastised him indirectly by saying, so are you happy by identifying with the body and the mind and putting forward the traditions which focus on the body and the mind? And then in the previous few verses we have been hearing Narada Muni elaborating how he described dharma, artha, kama and moksha. He described the impersonal Brahman through the active reflection, but he did not lay enough emphasis on devotional service. It's not that he did not glorify devotional service at all. He asked that he did glorify, but the percentage was much less. You know, it was maybe, I don't know, 20 ratio of 20-80 or something. There was some ratio. So it has to be 100%, then only you can feel full satisfaction. But that the percentage of glorification of Krishna in the Vedic literature Vyasadeva put forward was actually less. Therefore he was feeling this lack of satisfaction. So Narada Muni basically corrected his disciple and he encouraged him, actually ordered him to compile the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this verse, and that Vyasa can, then thus you can think of the past sins of God in France for the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage. So, because Vyasa is very compassionate, Krishna is compassionate, all his incarnations are have the same qualities, they're all compassionate. So, he could actually foresee the degradation in Kali Yuga and how people would be very fallen. And therefore, Narada Muni is encouraging Vyasa to compile the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, people basically don't get entangled in the Vedic literatures. Because sometimes we come across people who say, I'm reading the Advaita philosophy, or some say, I'm reading the Vedanta Sutra, I'm reading such and such Upanishad, or I'm reading such and such section of the Vedas. Sometimes you do come across such people. But they cannot actually understand the purpose of the Vedas. They cannot understand what's the purpose behind that. So, and other point is because people are so unqualified, generally one has to be situated in the mode of goodness in order to understand the Vedic literatures. So in Kali Yuga, the mode of goodness is not present. It's hardly there. It's just the mode of, there are only two modes. It's only the mode of passion and ignorance. The mode of goodness, it's actually, sometimes devotees say that such and such person is in the mode of goodness. So they are very clean, they're in the mode of goodness. But that's not actually correct. The underlying mode is actually the mode of passion. So even if you see many entrepreneurs or you go to many organizations, they are fucked up, you know. They are immaculate. The office you see is so clean. So maybe it's actually very, very clean. So, but that does not mean that they are in the mode of goodness. The underlying mode is the mode of passion because it is driven by unlimited desires and hankering and lamentation. So in Kali Yuga, the mode of goodness is actually not present, and therefore Vyasa, being able to see that, foresee that, he actually wants to give people the direct message, the conclusion of the Vedas, or the purpose of the Vedas. So therefore, Narada Muni is encouraging Vyasa, or ordering Vyasa, to actually compile Srimad Bhagavatam, not only for his own, to get rid of his own dispendency, but also for the benefit of all living entities. In Kali Yuga, who has the time to read the Vedic? Let alone, they don't even have the time to read Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. What to speak of reading the Vedas, and the Mahabharata has, correct me if I'm wrong, 100,000 verses? Yes, so, you know, at, towards the end of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 12th canto, it's mentioned how many verses are there in each Purana. So, we cannot even read the Puranas, which are actually the supplementary texts to the Vedas, let alone reading the Vedas. And the Vedas are actually very, very, they are in very difficult Sanskrit. No one knows Sanskrit. So it's not possible to. And even if we do know Sanskrit, we cannot interpret it in the right context. So therefore, Narada Muni wanted Vyasa to just give the crux of the Vedas, all the conclusion of the Vedas, all the purpose of the Vedas, so people can get benefited and they go back to God. So generally, studying the Vedas is a many, many lifetimes process where you gradually, you start off from Karmakanda, then you go to Sarkam, Nishkam, then you go to Karma Yoga, then Jnana Yoga, then you go to Dhyana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, and then finally you come to Bhakti Yoga. So it's a process of many, many lifetimes. It's not a one lifetime thing. So, because Krishna is very merciful and his representative is also very merciful, they actually wanted to give the crux of the Vedas. So therefore, Narada Muni told Vyasa, you actually compile the Srimad Bhagavatam so people can be attracted to this subject matter. So now it's mentioned in this verse that people in general have a taste for literatures by instinct. As you see, there are so many bookstores all over the joint. You know, you go to the city, there's Borders, Tibbets, Readers, so many. Wherever you go, and even if you go traveling, all these small towns, they actually have a bookstore. And these bookstores are filled with thousands and thousands of books. But such kind of literature is actually composed in very attractive language. And though they have a very attractive cover, you know, if you look at a newsstand, you know, the Time magazine might look very attractive, or, you know, Fortune 100 or whatever, business magazines are there. They look very attractive with a nice cover, inside very nice pictures, perfect grammar, everything is perfect, edited over and over again, and they're presented. So people have this instinct in them, at least in the human form, this instinct is there to inquire or to read. So even though people say, sometimes they're distributing books, and some people say, I don't read, that's actually not true. They do read. Maybe they don't like to read Bhagavad Gita, but they do read other magazines. Maybe they're reading the Carnag, or maybe Playboy or something. They're always reading something. So people actually have this instinct to read. But the unfortunate thing is that people are only reading, and if you go to libraries and schools, there's all different kinds of subject matter, books presented very nicely. You go to state library, there's, you know, thousands and millions of books. But it means nothing, it has nothing to do about Krishna or God. Anyway, nothing about who we are, our real identity, even spirit soul, even that is not there. So all these books are simply dealing with people's mental speculation or mental concoctions. Some of them deal with gross subject matter, others deal with speculations which are put forward in the mode of fashion. So people are very unfortunate because they have this propensity to read, but they're reading subject matter which has nothing to do with transcendence, and thus they're becoming more and more implicated in the three modes of nature. So, because depending on which mode of nature we associate with, we acquire a certain quality, we acquire that nature. So depending on which mode of nature the particular book people are reading, they will actually become conditioned by that mode of nature. And we hear from the Bhagavad Gita that we always don't stay in one mode. The three modes are actually competing with each other for supremacy. So then, therefore, depending on which mode of nature we come in contact with, our viewpoint and opinions will be shaped in a certain kind of way, and will view the world in a certain kind of way. But Krishna actually, the purpose of the material creation is actually to extricate the living entity, and to actually teach the living entity that this world is not a place where we can fulfill our desires. So there is this radical shift in the vision of a devotee, whereas an ordinary materialist is thinking that the purpose of this world, of course they also have the ultimate purpose. The ultimate purpose of this world is to satisfy all my desires. And this is a place where I can find fulfillment, peace, tranquility, and happiness. Contentment. So therefore, when so many problems come, they can't actually understand that all the difficulties or the miseries they're experiencing are actually to teach them a lesson that this is not a place where you can fulfill your desires. But a conditioned living entity thinks that I can somehow adjust these miseries by my own endeavor, by my own strength, by my own intelligence, and thus I can be happy. So that is actually a demoniac mentality, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 16th chapter, that demoniac people or conditioned living entities think that I'm perfect, I'm happy, I have no problems, I'm the richest person, and all, I have so many enemies, so many are killed, and the rest will also be destroyed. So they are actually more or less depending on their own prowess, or they're thinking they are the doer. So the mentality of a conditioned living entity is that the conditioned living entity is thinking, I have to find enjoyment, and who can help me in my enjoyment? And if I'm experiencing any difficulties, then they'll blame someone else. So a conditioned living entity, the first person the conditioned living entity blames is God. So whenever there's any problem, the first person to blame is God. And then, okay, if they're an atheist, then they'll blame everyone else around them. So even like, I think when there was the floods in Queensland, I think this year, this person. You know, I haven't done anything bad to anyone. I'm just doing good. But, you know, why is this happening to me? But for devotees, we don't, because devotees are not asuras. So devotees recognize that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. So devotees will not outright blame Krishna. So for generally devotees will blame the people around them or the situations around them. So again, it's the same tendency of conditioned immunity. Conditioned immunity is thinking, I'm the enjoyer, and if things don't work out, we blame God or his parts and parcels. But so anyway, coming back to the main point that people's everyone has this taste for reading literature. So therefore, Narada Muni told Vyasa to actually give them the direct conclusion, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled, and actually, it's good in a way that so much of the Vedas is not accessible because people will actually get confused. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada also, he encouraged very much the distribution of transcendental literature, because that can bring about a revolution in the impious lives of the people in general. So, because people have this tendency to read, when we present them with transcendental subject matter, their consciousness will change. And we should actually have faith in that. We should be convinced of that. When people will read his books, in due course of time, it will have an effect on them. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he encouraged very much the distribution of transcendental literature. Because when they come in the literature, which is in the pure goodness, it will actually counteract the modes of nature they are situated in. So when we give people the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not any ordinary book. Even if they touch it, they come in contact with the literature, which is free from the three modes of nature. So then there has to be a change in their karma. There has to be a change in their consciousness. So though we might not be able to see the effect very directly in terms of the results, but if we actually understand, there will be a change in their consciousness. And so like yesterday I came in touch with this boy, like 17 or 18 years old in Geelong. And he saw me, and I saw him, and he saw the books in my hand, and he was like attracted and smiling, so I stopped him. And he said, "Is that the Bhagavad Gita?" I said, "Yes." I said, "How do you know?" He said, I've actually read here and there. One of you guys sold to my friend, so I read his copy sometimes, but I don't have a copy of mine." But he said, "I have a question." He said, "Can you explain to me death in the three modes of nature?" And I was like shocked. So he had actually asked a very intelligent question, though he had read Bhagavad Gita just here and there. And he asked me, "Explain to me death in the three modes of nature." And so then I explained to him, and then he asked some few more very intelligent questions. So we can see in this way that when people read his books, it actually does have an impact on them. And then he straight away got the Bhagavad Gita. And I gave him my number and said, "We'll keep in touch." He was a very, very intelligent person. So then I also met another person, and he said that he's been reading the Bhagavad Gita for the last 25 years. He can't even count how many times he's read it. Though he's been to the temple here only twice. So there are people, they might not, you know, visit the temple so often, or they might not take up the full process of sadhana bhakti. But still, these books are out there in society, and people are actually reading them. And I met one rapper, he said he has Bhagavad Gita, and he gets ideas from here to rap. So be assured that actually people are using these books in one way or the other. It is having an effect on the consciousness. So if we are there more and more, if our presence is more out there, then people can actually get an opportunity to interact with devotees and even take it further. So people actually need help in reading this literature or putting it into practice. So they need some kind of help. point is to dovetail this propensity to reading Krishna conscious literature. That's the point. And also, yeah, so it's a good point you brought up that Prabhupada mentioned in the purport that the acharyas, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that, you know, there was this, there was fish, Patrika was there in Thakur.
Anand.
Anand. That was there. Maharaj, he said we can also produce, you know, literature by the hour. There's so much news in the spiritual world. There's so much happening in the spiritual world because the spiritual world constitutes 3/4 of God's creation, and the material world constitutes 1/4. So if there's so much news in 1/4 of the creation, what to speak of 3/4? So the point is, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said that we can also provide people with news and dovetail their propensity. Okay, we should stop here. It's 8 o'clock. If you have any questions, you can ask us. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yes.